Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And we've been away for a little while. Well, we were here Wednesday, but we haven't done one of these shows for about a month now on Friday night. And a couple of reasons.
Not for lack of desire.
Not for lack of desire, but more so for lack of ability. I wound up in a hospital for about 3 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks. Seemed like 3 weeks.
Forever.
And,
it was over the holidays, unfortunately.
Kind of recuperating and stuff after since then. And it was major, but it wasn't anything I really expected. It wasn't a heart attack or anything like that. It was just some
emergency surgery.
Unbelievable infection, and
quite serious.
Really, nearly dying, yeah. And you know, when you come close to death, you don't realize what's going on, you know, and you don't realize what you did, what you're doing, and but then finally it dawns on you that you're not invincible, you know, and makes you look back at what the things that you're doing. But anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about the Mayan calendar. George Dixon's going to be joining us soon. And we're going to be winding this thing up.
Aren't we going to be talking about the polar shift?
That's part of it. That's all part of it.
That's really...
That's all part of what...
In the exaggeration of the weather. You know, maybe that's a reason for that.
Let's,
we've been experiencing some pretty cold weather here in New England.
So that's more or less what's going on, and George has done some research. George, for those of you who know from following our show, has been researching this for quite some time, and knowledgeable in the subject. But if I don't do a lot of talking this evening, it's only because I've also developed a strain of laryngitis. So, you don't think so?
No, you just have a frog.
Does it sound like that?
No.
I'm rasping here. Hey, good evening, George.
How you doing, Leo?
How are you?
Yeah,
Bob?
I'm with you. Hi, Lila.
Hi, George. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Leo?
Well, he's still recovering. He's not back to 100% yet, but he still wanted to do the show even though he doesn't feel 100%.
I'm losing my voice quite a bit here tonight. But you know, energy level is a high low, right? That's how we operate around here.
Well, I know we wanted to talk about the Mayan calendar and about maybe the polar shift, because I think people, especially here in New England, we're experiencing some very cold weather. I also heard on the news the other night, just in passing, that magnetic north is now closer to Russia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that has an effect on the weather, or maybe you could comment on that, George.
Sure. Well, it does. what's happening here is the magnetics of the Earth is depleting, and the jet streams have been altered by that. And that's affecting our weather.
Oh,
yeah, there's a lot to the pole shift that you know, I'd like to talk about. You know, other areas I want to hit, if we can, is ascension consciousness from a Mayan perspective and the significance of going into the ninth wave that we're heading into. And we're in now the seventh day of the Mayan calendar. But the pole shift is affecting us, and our weather patterns, the weather that we've been experiencing, is because of that. You know, one of the causes. But you know, this is a natural thing that happens to the Earth, and the only question that I have is how are we going to survive this? And I think we'll be able to more readily than we were able to last time this happens. But we'll see what happens.
Now, this may seem like a dumb question to those that are knowledgeable. Where was magnetic north before? But I don't know before what. Well, maybe.
Well, it was.
I was looking for my notes on that.
Yeah?
Go ahead, Leo.
Well, no, it was actually, I think it's moved about 800 or 900 miles.
Yes.
Last year, a couple of years, toward the west. Toward the east. So we don't know at this point.
I got an email earlier in the week about one of the major airports was closed down for a day because they had to re-alter their lights or repaint some of their runways because they were off and the runways changed.
I would think like latitude, longitude, because and everything. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's affected the magnetic compasses. So that's why we're having problems, I think, with navigation. Yeah, but it's also the weather patterns themselves, the jet streams, and including not only the air streams but also the water, the water currents, and
like the Gulf?
that's a big problem right now.
Now the Gulf Stream, in fact, was responsible for keeping the weather in Western Europe rather mild.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, I did see something, maybe a month or two back, that had altered its course, but I don't know how it's altered its course. There was never anything more about it. Have you read anything more about that, George?
Well, I have, but it has to do with the water itself, the water currents. We're having, with the changing in the earth, we're having a lot of the ice in the Arctic and the Antarctic is melting. And what's happening is there's a natural convection with the water, fresh water. It's much heavier than salt water. And what you have is that you have fresh water that normally runs down from, let's say, the North Pole into the equator. Then what it does is it's in its migration, it will pick up the salt and the minerals and so forth, and it will raise itself in the water. It's much lighter than regular cold water, and what it would do is start a convection where it would turn in the equator and go back north again. And this is a natural convection that you have cold water with warmer water, which is mixed with the salt water. So what's happening is that that convection now is changing, where you don't have as much salt water, and the cold water basically is slowing down the process of this convection, which brings the warmer waters into or up to Europe and so forth. Now the currents that come out of the Gulf of Mexico run up the East Coast. And those are the currents that run over to Europe and warm Europe normally. But what's happening is they're not reaching Europe, and the cold weather patterns of the jet streams are actually turning Europe into a cold spot again.
How cold do you think that could become?
Well, it could be the new ice caps.
Really?
There was about 600 years ago, I believe it was. There was a period of that same thing happened in Europe where it became extremely cold for a number of years.
Really?
Some of the rivers that never froze. Over, and but I think it was about 600 years ago, like in the 1400s, 1500s, that happened. But
The Zuider Zee and all that in Holland, that all used to freeze. I don't know whether it still does.
Well, I'm sure it does now. Go on, George. I just thought it was, I didn't know. I mean, I really don't know what they're facing, but it is getting colder, not warmer.
Let's go down to the Antarctic now, the problems they've been having down there.
Yeah.
And they're having big problems with melting, melt-offs.
Mm.
Now, is that what's happening with that? Is that the reason for the flooding in Australia right now?
I would say it's partly responsible, but I think what's responsible for that whole area there is causing those jet streams and those water patterns to change. See, normally, you have the convection of the cold water going up to the equator, then crossing the equator or over into Indonesia. Then Indonesia, mm-hmm. that the water comes down with the rains, and as it goes south, it falls over the Antarctic, and which drops its snow. And of course, you know, the whole process of convection starts again. But I think what's happening is that those rain clouds and so forth are dropping their load of water off earlier than they normally would, or later than they normally would, and dropping in Australia. Those people have been devastated. I really feel bad for them. But, you know, it's...
That's it. Too. Brazil is undergoing a tremendous flooding as well.
So it
must be along the same... I don't know. I'm confused as to how the weather patterns operate, but uh-huh. all I think is that, you know, I wouldn't doubt that this mega polar shift has something to do with it, and is messing up the weather patterns. You know?
What do you predict for the weather for the United States? Do you have any information on that, George?
Well, prediction. Geez, I don't know. Other than we've been inundated by weather and rains and flooding for the last 10, 15 years.
We've been inundated by that. Yep.
In the Midwest, I feel bad for these people. First of all, the climatic changes we've been experiencing has affected the growing cycles. And, you know, I'm going back from 1991 and so forth, that the number of growing days was down to 96 from originally 135 growing days. And,
really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the vegetables at that time was starting to come from Central and South America. And I don't know if you remember that, but if you go to the supermarket now, I'm in upstate New York, that you don't find a lot of vegetables that are coming from South America, Central America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that basically is where they're grown now because we don't have the growing days available to us. So, you know, that has affected us. But I want to jump back to Antarctica again. When I said there was melting going on down there, there is melting, and there's a number of large ice caps or ice buildups that is breaking off and floating away. And there was one called the Lawrenceburg, I believe, and that was the size of Rhode Island that broke off about 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, that raised the water levels of the earth a few inches. But I think we have another big one called the Ross Ice Shelf. Now, this thing is like 400 by 600 miles wide. It's about 2 miles high. And what's happening is that's breaking off from the main berg. And, you know, what will happen is when it breaks away, it will float, you know, eventually to the equator where it will melt. Now, the Lawrence cap, like I said, it was the size of Rhode Island. And they were anticipating that this thing would take about 6 to 8 months for it to melt once it broke off, but they were off by big times. It only took 30-35 days for that to happen, and with a Ross shelf, if that breaks off, I mean that sucker can raise the water level. I think sixteen to thirty-two feet. It would raise it quite a bit. So you know, these are just part of the effects that we're having from these. From these ice changes from the Arctic.
Yeah, you're talking about the water level and worldwide.
Worldwide, yes. Oh, yes, worldwide.
Wow.
And you know, it's also affected the migration of fish too. But that's we can go on and on about this on the effects of it. But you know, we are definitely seeing a major shift in our weather patterns, and the polarity is different too.
So we're having this shift in weather patterns in polarity. The ice caps are melting. Does that mean that the ice caps are melting because there's global warming or because there's a shift in where the cold weather is really happening?
That's where shift in where the cold weather is where is convecting to.
Okay.
Just like it's funny watching the weather reports, let's say from Alaska, the last 10, 15 years. You know, there's places up there that the permafrost melts, and it's a rarity. But that's what's happening now. We have areas up there that is the same temperatures as Seattle, Washington. So you know, there's a change in the weather patterns in Australia, and I think Edgar Cayce talked about this, and he also talked about the best places to go. You know, when the when a shift does take place,
and I
think he mentioned at one time that the United States, Washington, would be moved up by Nome, Alaska, because of the weather conditions and the climate there.
So,
I said, these are all predictables.
Where do you say the best places would be?
Well, he predicted Virginia Beach. Yes.
Huh. So why?
I don't know. That's where his center is located, the ERE center. But apparently, he didn't want to move to someplace that was safe, and there it was.
Oh, that's weird. Right on the ocean. Wouldn't sound like a safe place to be. But
yeah.
So tell me more. You know, it's excuse me a second. It's a 2011 transition here. We're moving into. I remember you mentioned February, or I guess March of this year. We were entering some, what did you say, the ninth wave or something?
Yes, the ninth wave. Mm-hmm.
Could you explain that a little bit to me, George? Because I'm a little confused on that.
Me too.
Okay, we can come back to the polar shifting and so forth. There's a lot of other things that, you know, I'd like to talk about in what happens to us.
Right.
You know, how do we survive this? And the last time this happened, it was 9772 BC. And we not only had the shift in the our north and south poles, but we also reversed our orbit or our direction.
Okay.
And we were affected by that. We've talked about that before. And it took us, almost 20 years for us to come out of that that calamity. And, you know, I was interested more in how we did it, how we were able to survive. And, you know, for a while I was trying to get an idea how we were going to survive. But we're going to lose a lot. And the same thing can happen, but I think we have built-in apparatuses that are going to help us from that. But
like what?
Well, I think it's our energy bodies. Our energy bodies are different. And you know, I want to jump back to with the Mayans. You're asking about the significance of 321. We're starting the ninth wave, and the ninth wave deals with the unity consciousness. This is what we've been talking about for years now. And we have been basically under a left brain type of understanding of the world, and that is like a closed lineal idea of the world or thinking. And what's happening is that the ninth wave is going to shift us into more of an emotional or a physical connection with the outside world. Here, let me get my notes in order here. Give me a second.
Okay. We'll just give you a minute to do that.
I was just thinking of, as far as unity consciousness, the sudden assassination attempt there of the congresswoman down in Tucson, in Arizona. It was an interesting week because what I've seen, the outpouring of sentiment from around the country, but more so around that community of Tucson.
Well, it brought that community together.
Very strange, very strange reaction, but a very one of complete unity there. I mean, people were forming vigils and trying to heal and all this kind of stuff. But the thing that was most unusual about it was if we contemplate the ascension consciousness or the unity consciousness, then we see more of it at work within that community rather than
they weren't directing hate toward the perpetrator.
They were trying to make sense
of what happened,
and trying to bring some kind of peace, I guess, or an understanding to that, and bring
mm-hmm.
love. So love would overcome hate, you know. And I saw there were some interesting people on there tonight that were trying to do that, and I noticed in the news. But maybe that's the whole thing. You know, ever since my bout with I don't even know what the name of the disease was that I got. It was an infection anyway that nearly killed me. But I found myself being more conscious of how little we have, of how close we all are to the possibility of dying, and I found myself becoming a far more compassionate
mm-hmm.
toward the plights of other people, you know, in my condition or anybody's condition nearing or in some form of near death or, you know, illness or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
I think that draws me, I think that it's a leap and a bound toward that unity consciousness where we feel for one another in ways that, you know, that were cut out to us before. I mean, we cut off before.
Leo,
I can't quite understand it, but yeah, you know that, like that guy with the golden voice, the homeless guy that all of a sudden became
yes.
a celebrity. You know, I thought it was so
Ted
neat.
Ted Williams, is that?
Yeah, Ted Williams. But I thought it was so interesting because you really felt I don't know if you did or you know, but I think there was a sweeping feeling of people saying, you know, geez, I hope this guy can make it. You know what I mean? I wish this
yeah.
guy would make it. You know. And everything is being put there to help him, but yet he's still having problems. But you know you knew that, but it's kind of a testing ground for a guy giving a guy a second chance, you know. And but there's a surge of goodwill toward that guy. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
And that sense of goodwill. There's a lot of bad will, too. I mean, a lot of people are jealous or whatever, or skeptical. But. From a purely human look or viewpoint, I feel I'm encouraging that guy to do well. Hopefully he does, and I think everybody does really want to
Most,
see that.
Not everybody,
but a lot of people want people to have a second chance and do well. You know,
Leo. You know, your unity consciousness. You know, it's looking at things from a different view because
right.
for so long we've been thinking about things but not feeling something. There's a difference in understanding something or feeling something.
Yeah,
and
yeah you're right.
You're
feeling. I felt for that. And you start feeling for people as opposed to thinking about people, you know.
Yes, but Leo, I think this is part of in understanding the ascension consciousness. That
yeah.
this is something that we're experiencing, and this ninth wave will bring this factor on. Because, you see, since about 31 or 34 B.C., which was when we started this the shifting, we were in a male left left brain thinking patterns. That's why for the last 5,000 years we've had a male dominance. But what's happening now is that we're going now in the complete opposite with a female perspective. And it basically is dealing with the outside world, not the inner world. The inner world, the male left brain concept, is a close understanding where the feelings that we're experiencing right now deals with the emotional aspect of our directions. And that is being in touch with the outside world. And we've talked before about connecting with the heart. The heart is the center for the emotional feeling base. That also gives the power to the thinking base of the brain to operate. But it's going back to the basic, which is the heart, which is controlling the whole body, which is in touch with the outside world and the inside world. And that is the unity consciousness that we're experiencing, which we're shifting into.
I agree with you, George. I really do believe that now.
So that's what's happening with these people out there. I mean, everybody is feeling this from an emotional, from a feeling perspective. And now it's not a matter of pointing the finger. You know, how can we make this better? And that basically is what we're moved into.
Right. It's kind of like people trying to say, how do we stop it? How do we?
No, they just
not encourage this kind of thing.
They're just feeling. They're feeling love and caring toward this woman and toward the people that passed on.
Right.
They aren't really full. They don't seem to be full of analysis for the event.
No, they just think that love or
no, they don't think. They
whatever.
Feel.
Yeah, okay. All
right. I was wrong before when it's the eighth wave that gave us that emotional kickback. Now, in the ninth wave, basically, is the co-creation, where we're not restricted from either the left brain or the right brain. It's using them together in co-creating a new consciousness. That's what I'm projecting right now. Even with the eighth wave, it's part of the seventh day that we're experiencing, but it's now putting the emotional and the mental likes together or focused together. And that is the creation that we're going to experience. And that is only going to run from 3/9/11 to 10/28/11. So it's a very short period. And the last period, the eighth wave, started basically in 1999, which is ending on March 9th. So, you know, this is how fast this is going to work. This has worked. And this co-creation process is going to finish out the seventh day and leave us at a spot that, you know, heaven knows where we're going to be or what we'll have. You know, it's looking at it, the world, not from the old perspective, we exploded out and we conquered everything that we can imagine. But what's happening now is that we have an implosion where we're experiencing everything from the outside, which is coming back to its creator again. And from this creation point, a new beginning begins. And, you know, it's like the breath of yin-yang. You have the breath going out, which was an explosion for us in our consciousness. And let's just take it back from 1900, you know, to the year 2000. You know, to now we're imploding back upon ourselves. And that's what we're up against for the next 9 months. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So we're gonna be falling in on ourselves in the next 9 months.
Well, yeah, or coming to terms with, you know, what is important and what isn't important, and throw the rest away, and you know, get down to business.
So how do you see that manifesting itself in the world around us?
Well, I've always said that. I think
there'll be some kind of events, or
do you think the economy will completely collapse? Do you think the world markets, the countries, globalism, all all the different
isms
will not isms, but all these different countries will eventually implode, you know, bankrupt.
Well, if nothing, you know, that is the first thing that's going to happen. But I think that's only the start of something that's going to, a big change that's going to overtake everything. You know, it could take an outside intervention, and it doesn't surprise me if it did. And, you know, I would be very happy to connect with our galactic neighbors, that's for sure.
Well, aren't we supposed to be doing that pretty soon? Isn't that supposed to be part of the seventh day?
Yeah, that's supposed to happen.
Well, we could jump into that. I mean, Jumbo Melchizedek was talking about connecting with the inner earth, you know, the inner earth beings. You know, there are extraterrestrials, but there are also interterrestrials. And, you know, he was talking about some of the interterrestrials that come from the inner earth, that they went into the inner earth over a million years ago. But they're actually sentinel beings. And what he calls them are lava people, because what they are is a glowing hot lava. And I could understand that. I could understand a being that, you know, would have you know, a temperature of 500 degrees because of the energies that you know, he could hold. But, you know, looking at this from a different perspective, these type of beings would have to be a silicon-based being, or it could be a silicon-based being. Where, you know, I've talked about crystals, you know, they're millions and millions of years old, but they are alive and they do grow. So who's to say that the evolution of us, of our souls on a three-dimension, you know, could not incorporate, you know, incorporating into silicone life forms. And instead of living, you know, 100 years, you know, we'll live a couple hundred thousand years. But, you know, this is what our ancestors could have gone to and done. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if basically that could be a forerunner, I think, or the consciousness connected with that could be the forerunner of what we've experienced for the last 30 years in dealing with silicone computers, silicone communications. And, you know, we can go back to 1930 or even before that with Tesla. You know, the crystal, it was an introduction to crystal technology, but also interfacing with crystal. And, you know, we have GPS systems now in our car, but, you know, we in a way have made contact with silicone, I believe. And part of that is integrating not only the use together, but also the thinking process. And they say it's going to be maybe 2013 where we would have a computer that would compare with a human brain, or it can calculate like a human brain could. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, but here is part of the creative consciousness that we do have. If we think something, it will manifest. So regardless of how we think, if we want something, we can produce it. And that's been that we've proven, you know, in the last 30 years with just going to the moon. But I'm rambling on here. Go ahead.
you're on track. I understand what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And I think as we gather more into this co-creationism, once we get into this next dimension, or density, as they call it, our dimension. We are going to be doing all this, and of course, who knows if silicone is the
form that we all may take.
Instead of carbon, we take on silicone. I mean, to exist in that dimension, I don't know, but whatever it is, the transformation is starting. It was very bizarre, and I know, George. I know you've been through a lot of.
A lot of physical,
you know, you've been through operations and so on and so forth. So I know you're well aware that, you know, and I publicly acknowledge your support, through my trouble there and all your phone calls and so on. But keeping the day in front of you, you know, has gotten me this far, and you know, living for this day. And I'm constantly doing that now. But what I'm getting at is that I'm finding that my as I do that, as I live more in the day, I'm also more capable of manifesting things in the now than I was before. Three or four weeks ago.
Well, you weren't even thinking about the day. You were thinking about what was going to happen
the
next
day,
week and
the next
tomorrow.
Day, great.
And,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was pretty bizarre.
So you rushed through every day, not even enjoying it.
Right. So now as I lumber through each day, I kind of say, okay, this I need to do. This is what's going to matter. This is what, you know, and I don't put things off, or I don't think so far in the future. I think more in the present, and things materialize that I, you know, that I'm thinking of. You know what I mean? I'm still convalescing here, but
you're rambling a little bit. Do you get his point, George?
But I don't know if you get my point at all. I am living more for the now than I ever have, and understanding the importance of living now and not then, you know, or not 2012 or two, you know, God knows when. But understanding what's happening now and creating whatever forces I need now to continue the day.
What do you think about that, George?
Well, yeah, I would agree with that 100%. The reason why is, you know, the only thing that's relevant to life is what's going on right now. And the way things, the way they speed up from one week to the next, it's very hard to predict. And even with my own self, I can't go, you know, I can't think more than, let's say, a week or 2 weeks away, because it takes me from what's going on now. And if nothing else, you know, I'll use it in my intent, what I have to do or what I want to do. You know, it's not something I focus on. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, I take a look at what the hell is going on in the world. And, you know, this week I got a lot of emails, I think. And it was dealing with the Jesuit priesthood. And, you know, there's a lot of information that's come out now with the Catholic Church and how it's been, you know, and the popes. And by God, you know, I went through this years and years ago. And, you know, it's like going back and remembering and putting everything, you know, in a perspective, just like the Council of Trent, what that meant to the, you know, to the church. You know, it's not worth it. And for me to get into it, you know, it's very interesting, but you know, I just don't have time for it. And I know with what's going on in the world, going on in this country, I think with government. You know, there's a lot of people out there forming small groups and trying to break away from, you know, the local mentalities and doing it themselves, and, you know, starting their own constitutional groups and so forth. And
how's
you know,
that working?
I don't know. And to be truthful, you know, I don't care how it works, other than, you know, I try to keep abreast of what's going on, but I can't involve myself because, first of all, you know, it's all folding anyways. It's all crumbling in, and part of this is, you know, just crumbling process. But, you know, it's a lot easier for me to sit back and just try to entertain, you know, my own thoughts on that, but not to spend my whole life on it. And, Leo, it's like dealing with, today, where, you know, I deal with what is real and, you know, what pain I have to deal with today. And tomorrow may be a different story. And, you know, my health changes from day to day. So, you know, one day I'm good and one day I'm bad. So that's the way I've always been. But by then, I still get one foot out of the bed every morning, and I feel glad about that. And, you know, I'll never be able to do anything better tomorrow than what I can do today, because I'll be that much closer to death. And that's the only thing that's really real in my life. And, heck.
You're absolutely right. You know, you're one day closer to the end, you know, whatever that end is. You know, you're one day older is, you know, one day closer. Right? But, you know, it all depends on how you look at your life. And I personally see it a lot differently and much more immediate. And I appreciate the people around me much more immediate, much more, and my surroundings more, and everything about my life becomes much more
real,
yeah, than illusionary. And you know, it's friends and family and loved ones and my pets, you know, and you know, things like that. They all take on a new meaning.
Especially when you think that you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
You could have lost them.
Or that you could have lost them. And you'd never see them again.
No,
go ahead, George. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead with your friend. Shout.
Yeah. It just takes on a tremendous, it takes on a different dimension, you know, a presence that you didn't have before. Yeah, it's almost as though you were sitting on gold and you all along and you were thinking that it was there, you know what I mean? And that you were always pursuing gold when you had it all along and never appreciated it.
Well,
so,
my views of the medical industry, Leo, I mean, the insurance company has put over $1 million to keep me alive, and I'm not exaggerating on that.
Well, that's good of them to do that.
But you know, for so many years, I put down a sense of, you know, what's wrong with the medical industry, and I was very happy, you know, that you know, I've been kept going. You know, in understanding what's happening right now with the medical insurance and so forth, we have a lot of problems. There's no doubt about it, and I have to say that. In the last couple of years, with some of the medical treatments and hospitalizations that I've had, I've had the best health that I could ever want. These people were beautiful and very diversified, you know, from all countries around the world. And I love these Indian nurses. They're beautiful. They really are. But, you know, I have faith in our medical people. I have faith in the people. And even though, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and, you know, the ones that make a lot of money with this, they're going to fall by the wayside. But I think it's the people who are the healers. It's not the instruments that we play with. So I have a lot of faith in humanity, and I know we'll come out of this okay. But it is falling in. There's no doubt about it, just like, you know, the financial world around us. But, you know, I have faith in humanity. And I think we're going to come out of this. We're going to come out of this smelling like a rose. I really feel that.
I hope so. I what you're saying.
Well, there's no hope involved. There's no hope with it. Either it does or it doesn't. It is.
Yeah. Okay. It is. But I got to tell you, after the care that I've received, you know, for the last 3 weeks, I just been overwhelming, and I have a tremendous different attitude toward the medical profession, because I've never been that intimately involved with it to the point where they actually saved my life and continue to do so. And I
how kind the individuals are.
How kind. Every individual is.
Unbelievable.
And you know, and how committed they are to their professions, and you know.
They think nothing of getting up at 4 in the morning and driving through a storm because they are needed at their hospital.
That's right. All these people need them.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it's a dedication and a devotion
it's a true calling, I think. It's a real calling.
And people, nurses have been there 30 years and 25 years and 40 years. And, you know, they just continue to do their work and love what they're doing and love the people. And it just amazes me. Totally, absolutely amazes me. But that was a transformation for me as well.
Well, Leo, that is the ascension consciousness that we're talking about. What you're doing is that you're raising your consciousness to the heart, and basically you're raising it a higher vibration. And by doing that, you're ascending this three-dimensional reality. And we talked before about three-dimension and four-dimension. you are living in a fourth dimension when you do that, because you're no longer in a physical world. You can
bypass it. You're bypassing it, because their whole job is to patch up that third dimensional world people live in. All right, knowing full well that that's their job, is to keep us in this third dimension.
But
let us pass on.
Unless you have, I call it love for humanity.
Oh yeah. You couldn't do that job.
No, huh? I mean it takes so much. It's a whole real attitude towards people
that they
have that is very, very special, I think. And as I said, I think it's a calling.
Yeah.
It really is. A healer is called to that profession. And whether she's a nurse or whether she's a doctor or...
Whatever.
Well, Lana, I think we all have it in us. We all basically have the same thing inside of us. And it's a matter of using it.
Yeah.
Or some people use it in different ways, that's all. But I think it takes a very special person to do what they do. I mean, nurses.
Yeah.
I think nurses work especially hard. I really do.
Yeah.
It's not an easy job. I never really noticed before. I haven't been in hospitals too often myself either. And I never was really aware. I haven't been one as often as I have been with Leo, who's been in. He was in the hospital for 15 days, and I was there every day. And then I have to bring him back. I brought him back every day for the last week. So you get to know people and see how hard they work.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. That's not an easy job. Not an easy job at all. But the people do it with such a smile.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
You know, I earlier in the week I was thinking about some of the work that I've done, and it's physics on a multi-dimensional level. But I think if in my education as a metaphysician, I studied physics, studied hard science, but metaphysics basically gives me another plateau where I can not only understand it, I can feel it, and it's used in the emotional body. So, the emotional body also includes the spiritual body, and in understanding the emotional body, which incorporates spirit, it's working and understanding on two levels of reality. So, with a normal educational system we have, we're restricted only to true reality or provable reality, but something in between is not acceptable. And that's why it's been left out of our normal teaching patterns. But by God, if I wasn't able to feel or understand something from an emotional level, I wouldn't have half the knowledge that I have. And that I give to my physical body. But, these are all things that we all have. All of us have this. But it's a matter of just using it and putting it in practical use.
And getting in
touch.
Does
that make sense?
Oh yeah, I think we all have huge capabilities,
mm-hmm.
but we don't always get in touch with those capabilities. I mean, there's so much of the brain that's not used, George.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, but we have that available to us now. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
All we got to do is put it to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. My goal. I'm beginning to understand ascension consciousness more and more. We've been talking about it for so long, over the last number of years.
Yeah.
But I think for the first time, I fully understand it in what I can kind of feel what it is. It's like
yes.
if everybody around you, regardless of who it is, okay, just took one another's, just shook one another's hand, or took one another's hand at the same time, that we were all about to, and accepted that person for whatever or whoever it is they are, at the same moment, then that moment is a form of an ascension of consciousness, all right? Because by accepting, I guess, by accepting someone regardless of
they do that in church.
That's not what I mean. I don't mean a church handshake, you know. What I'm talking about is like a street handshake, where you know what I mean? Where somebody, you don't even know the guy, but you pick them up, you know what I mean? Or you say, glad to meet you, glad to know you. That is the...
pay it forward.
Pay it forward.
I have an old saying, you know, him without sin cast the first stone, you know.
Yeah.
No, pay it forward. That's, yeah.
That's ascension consciousness.
Yeah, there you go.
Agree. Yeah, I think so. But anyway, I know that I got a lot of people helped me, through the last 3 weeks, boy. And you know, anything I can do for anyone else, you know, I've got a lot of paying forward to do. You know what I mean? Because I'm still alive. Yeah.
Well,
had I not made it, my pay forward would have been done. But
your purse would have been empty.
My pay forward would have been done, but it's not. So I'm here, so I continue to try
just,
to pay forward.
Each day, you try to do the very best that you can with that day.
Yeah.
And
there
not,
you go.
And not let it go, and then you go to bed and you get up and the next day and you say, I'm going to do the very best that I can with this day.
That's what
there
I
you
was.
Go.
Every day. Yep.
Well, I try to. I think that's an important thing. You can't do anything about yesterday, and tomorrow hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So.
Just do it.
Just use the gift of today to do the very best you can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a simple thing, but.
Not really.
I think we forget about that.
I do. Right,
I want to jump back to polar shift.
Yeah.
Because
jump back.
I think. Yeah, you know, we left it kind of doom and gloom, which, you know, it does look like doom and gloom. But I think there's some saving potential that's coming into play now, that even with ascension consciousness, we can rise ourselves up above this where we won't be affected by this third dimensional wave, if you'd want to call it that. I've talked about beings, the Hathors, that live on Venus, which... live in a sulfuric type of atmosphere, and yet they're three-dimensional beings, but they aren't affected. The reason why is because their energy levels are raised a dimension where they're not affected by that. And I think the same thing could happen to us, and we can put that in motion just by believing that we can shield ourselves from that by raising up, and by feeling it, we definitely can. And that would be, that's part of the ascension where we can ascend, you know, let's say the things that we've been, that were, has been harmful, you know, up until now. But, you know, maybe this is just another evolution of this body that, you know, this vehicle that we're using. And, you know, with the knowledge that we have now with DNA, we can produce life, and it's a fact. But the only problem is, you know, are we going to end up like the Empire in Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we don't want that.
We can because we have that.
Yeah.
Nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just thinking that as long as we continue forward, I guess. Then I guess we're okay. You know. I always fear going back. I don't like going backwards. It's disturbing. But if you can keep going forward and keep thinking forward.
Don Juan told Carlos Castaneda's, go forward with your heart. You'll never go wrong.
Oh, yeah. I believe that. I believe that fully well. And in some way, I don't know. Everything that we're doing, everything we've been doing, Lila and I and you and everyone, has been involved, but for the last 10 years in this media frenzy that we've pulled together over the years, has been that. It's been moving forward with your heart, moving forward with our heart. And I think we're doing that continually, and that's why we're here tonight. And I know we've affected a lot of people, George.
Well, a lot of people have affected us.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people have, absolutely. But we're doing something. We're doing something. And we're doing more than we even could imagine we're doing.
I just wanted to be, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to ask you, George, how long, I just want to get back to the polar shift for a moment. How long do you think that polar shift would take? To make?
Well, from past evidence, it happens within 72 hours.
That fast, huh?
72. Yeah, very quick, very quick. And, you know, it could happen any time.
Mm.
And, well, yeah.
The warning signs?
Excuse me?
And no real warning signs, though?
I don't think so, Leo, other than the warning signs that come maybe 24 hours beforehand, you know, but basically it's almost instantaneous.
So what do you think those warning signs might be?
Well, I think the potential of people feeling the event. And understand, the emotional body is not restricted by time. It can go into the future and it can go into the past. So, you know, you could be experiencing something that's coming in the future. Just like, I think in one of Star Trek, one of the series, they talked about a planet that was blown up. And Spock, I think, was able to pick it up, being an empath in a sense, where I think we would be able to experience that beforehand. And maybe give enough time to go for the higher hills for shelter. But I think we would be able to experience something coming on. And with that, I think we would be able to protect ourselves. Now, I was worried about what happens to people if we lose our memory and so forth. But I believe we are in a different spot in history and our place in the possession of the equinox where, you know, our Mooka bodies will kick in and protect us. When I say Merkaba, it's that living field around us. And we've talked a bit about that in past years. But I think that Merkaba, on a three-dimensional level, is going to stay with us, and that energy body will protect us. In multi dimensions, I don't know what type of protection it would offer, other than, you know, it can be used as a vehicle to go backwards and forwards, and it will protect us. So I do believe that these Merkaba fields that we have around us, along with the field of the Earth itself, which has been changed, you know, that will be able to kick in and protect us from, let's say, physical death. I think there's some salvation out there somewhere, or it could be, you know, an outside intervention with something coming in and helping us. I don't know. Maybe that's my little kid inside of me saying, you know, if it's coming, come on, let's give us the full shot of we are the people we've been waiting for, you know, we are the generation that we've been waiting for, and it's happening right now, folks. So every day is a different day, and you know.
Well, George, we got about 50 seconds left to go before they shut us down. But I want to thank you so much for being on tonight, and it's a good show. And we'll be talking to you next week, I guess. So,
okay, sounds good.
Thank you, George, and have a nice weekend.
We'll talk to you.
Okay.
Soon.
Okay.
Right. Good night.
Good night.
And good night, George. And that was George Dixon, and we want to thank everybody who listened tonight, and please tell your friends about us, and hopefully you got a little more information on the Mayan calendar and the polar shift and what's coming up. And if you want to contact George, please feel free to go to brotherdixon@aol.com. brotherdixon@aol.com. And you can reach us at lastillshow.org. So, good night.
And good night.